All right, now where are we as far as the budget compromise is at 8:40 on this last Friday of the session?
Well, the budget is now out of what's called the Conference Committee and is laying on every member's desk in the Texas House and the Texas Senate. And under our rules, you've got 48 hours to lay on the desk before we can bring it up. So both in the Texas House and the Texas Senate, we'll pass that budget that's sitting on everybody's desk probably sometime Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening. And as I've said before, that budget will work. Under the circumstances, I'm proud of what we accomplished, but it was the hardest thing I've ever done in politics.
Now, in the beginning, we were talking, what is it, $12 billion difference. How in the world can you close that gap? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I mean, it's because some of the $12 million is based on this assumption, that assumptions, and various things. And we basically closed that gap by underfunding Medicaid and deferring some of the spending costs into the next biennium. We basically did it by underfunding Medicaid and doing some bookkeeping maneuvers. But we also got some help from the comptroller, who, since that budget was laid out, has raised her biennial revenue estimate by over $1.5 billion, and that made a big difference.
Yeah, we do feel a little bit better about that. But now the school financing thing, what would we tell superintendents today? Because obviously they've made plans, but how close are those plans going to be able to do what they need to do?
Well, I guess what you tell superintendents is you're not safe yet. We're still in session. But they've got one thing that they can kind of hang their hat on. There is agreement in the Texas Senate and the Texas House on how much money we're going to appropriate for public education, which surprisingly is more money than we appropriated in 2010 and 11. And now the argument is over how that money gets distributed, and the argument is not going to change dramatically one way or another as far as the, so I think superintendents can pretty much plan to write their budgets based on an average of 6 to 10% reduction in funding compared to the previous year.
Okay, Steve Ogden joining us from Austin. Let's talk about House Bill 1937. That was the talk of the town yesterday. This bill would make it
TSA
thing. Yeah, to make it a state crime for security screeners to intrusively grope the people that they were screening at airports and other public buildings was withdrawn from debate on Tuesday, and Dan Patrick is pretty angry at the lieutenant governor right now. Your comments.
Yes.
Your comment. Yes.
Yes. You know, that bill, and I think it reflects the sentiment of most Texans that they don't like or think it's absolutely necessary to get such intrusive bodily searches to get on an airplane. But it's a protest bill because under our Constitution and under federal preemption and under all the rules that are associated with flying on airplanes, it is unenforceable and basically a protest vote as far as it affecting how we operate at airports. It won't.
Now the governor.
So it gets down to something that I've been talking about before. This session was driven more by political ideology, both on the left and the right, than any session I've ever been. And there was bill after bill after bill that made political statements. And one of them is don't spend the rainy day fund. That's just all political. And it made it very hard to govern this time because the ideologues were in control.
Now, my understanding is that on Wednesday night, late Wednesday night, in the Senate, the lieutenant governor was going to bring the bill back up, but people gathered around Senator Patrick and told him he didn't have enough votes, and people up in the gallery started yelling, and folks were escorted out by state troopers. Is that right?
Yeah, it was great. but unfortunately, it revolved around a lot of perception, and I believe that the lieutenant governor didn't really want that bill to pass on the grounds that the bill wouldn't work, but didn't want to take the political heat for killing it himself, so he was looking for other ways to do it. Patrick, on the other hand, wanted to make a political statement and was pretty upset that it looked like he was getting blamed for not passing it. So, once again, it had a lot more to do with politics and perception than anything of substance. I don't think Patrick ever had the votes to pass that bill, but nobody really wanted to stand up and just say, look, you don't have the votes, and I'm against it, so pull it down. And all of this stuff occurred in order to keep the people that were involved from being fingered as the culprit.
Now, we finish up on Monday. When we started this session and going into that, you had some ideas for constitutional amendments. What's the story on those? Among them would have been a property tax on the state level.
Was sort of like a bottle rocket. It didn't go too far.
Okay. So none of these constitutional amendments that you wanted to put forth will end up on the ballot in November is the way that it looks?
Well, there's going to be several. I think two that I passed that we haven't talked about before but are very interesting constitutional amendments, and they have to do with the permanent school fund and how we determine how big the corpus of the permanent school fund, and we have some constitutional amendments to basically increase the size of the corpus of the permanent school fund, which will then allow the State Board of Education to distribute more money to the schools through the available school fund. And another constitutional amendment, well, the same constitutional amendment that will redirect some of the mineral revenue that we receive from oil and gas wells on state lands into the available school fund, which is the fund we can spend, and away from the permanent school fund, which is a big corpus, and you can only earn the interest on it. And at the end of the day, how much money are we talking about? It's a lot. It's $500 million.
It is a lot.
If I've got another minute, another thing I was talking about in the Senate yesterday amongst the senators was, I said, Texas is such a huge state, and the economy is so big that very slight improvements or can make huge differences in the way we're able to operate state government. I've said this since I've been in politics. There's a close correlation between the health of the economy and the health of the government. And here's an example. When we wrote House Bill 1, we changed an assumption, which was the comptroller originally assumed that property tax values in Texas would drop by 2% next year. And we said, no, we don't think that's right. We're going to assume that property values in Texas will not drop at all. They'll just stay flat. Well, in dollar amounts, it's hard to imagine how much money that assumption is, but I'll tell you, it's $800 million.
Goodness, yeah.
To change an assumption that property values will not go down 2%, they'll stay flat over the next year, or next 2 years, is an $800 million difference in budgeting. And so I'm pretty optimistic. Our economy's coming back, and as it begins to come back, the kind of changes are going to make a big difference. And so I'm optimistic that 2 years from now, these kind of tough budget decisions we had to make and this state recession will be a memory, and we'll be able to do a better job for Texas.